This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. If you're curious about the history of the American Communist Party, then there's now a new place to go, the Tamamit Library at New York University. For years, the Communist Party kept all its books and papers in a building on 23rd Street in Manhattan. But financial problems and the need to renovate the old building forced it to put the archive in storage or give it to an institution. NPR's Margot Adler reports that several thousand boxes got carted to the New York University Library, which documents the history of the labor movement and the American left.
Michael Nash, the director of the Tamamit Library, says individuals had given the library communist material in the past, but he had no idea the party had this archive or that he would find such treasures in it.
The library itself is 20,000 books, probably 5,000 journals, every pamphlet the party ever published going back to 1919, the entire photo morgue of the Daily Worker going back to 1917, literally a million photographs, and that's actually a real number.
I'm looking over here at Box EP Archive, yeah. 121. How many boxes do you have?
The neighborhood is 2,000.
Party officials did not immediately agree to give the collection to Tamamit, and the decision had to be made collectively. One former party member told me, given how they need the money, I can't believe they just gave it away. But Marilyn Young, who teaches history at NYU and is also working with Nash on the archive, says when the decision was made, access was total. Amazing, she said, considering the party couldn't know everything that was there.
Nobody can, not with such a massive material.
They gave me full access to every file cabinet, every closet, every desk drawer.
And they didn't take anything away.
They didn't take anything away. They didn't know what I was looking for. They didn't review anything. You know, I've been in this business for 35 years, and that's never happened.
One day, Michael Nash opened a cleaning closet in their building filled with toilet paper and paper towels, and there on the floor was a 90-minute tape from 1961. It was W.E.B. Du Bois, the noted African-American intellectual and activist, reminiscing shortly before his death. In this snippet, he describes speaking at colleges, finding the young people very dull, until suddenly the sit-ins came to the South.
The older people like myself are not needed just now. They're younger people who are going on and doing their own thinking. They don't need any advice from me. Perhaps I need some from them.
Another time, Nash saw this box on the floor.
All of a sudden, I crawled under somebody's desk to see what was in this little box, and I open it up, and it's the Joe Hill Last Will and Testament and his prison correspondence.
Joe Hill was the famous labor organizer and songwriter who became the subject of songs, I Dreamed I Saw Joe Hill Last Night, and of plays, books, and movies. Convicted of murder, he wrote his will in verse the night before he was shot by a firing squad in 1915. Faded and handwritten, his will now rests in a glass case. Marilyn Young reads it out loud.
My will is easy to decide, for there is nothing to divide. My kin don't need to fuss and moan. Moss does not cling to rolling stone. My body, oh, if I could choose, I would to ashes it reduce, and let the merry breezes blow my dust to where some flowers grow.
And there was so much more. The party's founding documents, the call to the first convention in 1919, even code names for some early party members. Earl Browder, who led the party at one time, was known as Dix. And there are documents that talk about the role of the Comintern and the Third International, which gave the American Communist Party a charter. We rummage through boxes of photos from the Spanish Civil War.
I mean, it's going to take a lot of money and a lot of time to really get it properly cataloged. But until then, a researcher comes in, asks for a box that's sort of in the general neighborhood of what they're interested in, and finds absolute treasures.
You may ask why, besides building renovation and financial difficulties, the Communist Party decided to make all of this available. Some would argue so much has already been discovered, including information from Soviet documents that have come to light. Nash, for one, does not believe this new material will reveal much about any secret relationship between the American Party and the Soviet Union.
I haven't seen anything at all in the archive. I can't say with 100% certainty that nothing exists.
But he admits he hasn't seen everything. Nash says phone calls come in constantly from people who want to dig through the archive to study the history of the Cold War or the labor and civil rights movements, as well as film historians, scholars of political cartoons and poster art. Michael Zweig is a professor of economics at the State University of New York at Stony Brook. Looking at these documents, he says,
it gives you an inside look at the primary documents, the letters, the correspondence, the minutes of meetings.
After all, one historian told me, Memory's a strange thing. You can't depend on oral history. What this archive does is give a paper trail. Margot Adler, NPR News, New York.